Our study tonight is out of Jeremiah chapter 17, verses 9 through 18, relying on God to handle very evil people. The only thing about man that God claims is great is his sin. In Genesis chapter 6, verse 5, God saw that the sin of man was great upon the earth. That's it. Everything else is pretty small for us. And some sinners are so wicked that their sinful acts are incredibly difficult for the upright to understand, let alone to handle. Well, Jeremiah 17, 9 through 18, I wrote 13, it should have been 18, I'm sorry about that, and its context provides the welcome solution to this problem and review it for our insight. I'd like to read the verses and then we'll look at them. Jeremiah 17, 9 through 18. The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? I, the Lord, search the heart. I try the reins, even to give every man according to his ways and according to the fruit of his doings. As the partridge sitteth on eggs and hatcheth them not, so he that getteth riches and not by right shall leave them in the midst of his days, and at his end shall be a fool. A glorious high throne from the beginning is the place of our sanctuary. O Lord, the hope of Israel, all that forsake thee shall be ashamed, and they that depart from me shall be written in the earth, because they have forsaken the Lord, the fountain of living waters. Heal me, O Lord, and I shall be healed. Save me, and I shall be saved, for thou art my praise. Behold, they say unto me, where is the word of the Lord? Let it come now. As for me, I have not hastened from being a shepherd to follow thee, neither have I desired the woeful day. Thou knowest that which came out of my lips was right before thee. Be not a terror unto me. Thou art my hope in the day of calamity. Let them be confounded that persecute me, but let not me be confounded. Let them be dismayed, but let not me be dismayed. Bring upon them the day of evil, and destroy them with double destruction. Okay. In the context, Jeremiah 17, 5 to 8 had just contrasted the way of the wicked with the way of the righteous, revealing how the wicked would lack God's blessing, where the righteous would enjoy abundant blessing. You remember that last week? The wicked man would be like the juniper out of the desert. He wouldn't see very good. And yet, the person who was righteous would be like a tree that had been transplanted onto a garden where God took care of him, and he would flourish even in times of drought. However, that situation leads to the question, if the ways of blessing and cursing are so clear, like in verses 5 through 8, why would anyone choose the path of sin? Well, Jeremiah knew that the heart of man was the cause of a person's choosing the path of sin, and that man's heart was deceitful above all things and desperately sick, so who could understand it? In other words, who is able to fathom the depths of man's wickedness so as to render adequate justice on him for his sin? That's quite a question for Jeremiah to ask, because he was working with people who were so hard that even though he worked in their midst for 40 years, the Lord told him, nobody's going to believe you. No one's going to side with you. So he had a tough ministry. I mean, you know, 40 years and no converts. Ouch. Well, in wonderful relief, God answered the question, asserting that I myself, it's an emphatic pronoun in this verse, in verse 10, I myself, Yahweh, and that's the I am. So I myself, the I am, explore or search through the heart. The verb hakar means to explore through. It's just like you go into a cave with a light, a helmet with a light on it, and you explore all the minutiae. That's what God does. He goes into the heart and explores it. He explores our hearts. There's absolutely nothing within us that God misses. And then I scrutinize. The word is bahan. The kidneys, kilya, is literally the word for kidneys. And the kidneys were used as a figure of speech for the seat of emotions. The kidneys, everybody knew the kidneys are back here in the back. But apparently when your emotions run high, the kidneys can often overwork. And this is why a person has to make a quick trip to the restroom and so forth. And so they often viewed the kidneys as a seat of the motion. The Jews also felt that the intestines were the seat of emotion because you get the butterflies in the intestine area. Okay, and so that they would often use intestines or kidneys. But it refers to the seat of emotion, affection. So God explores through the heart and he scrutinizes the emotion and the affection. In other words, there's absolutely nothing by way of motive or thought or intent within every single person's heart that God misses. He has it all. So God claimed that he himself is Israel's covenant-keeping Yahweh. Yahweh is the I Am name that God introduced himself to Moses with at the burning bush. In perfect righteousness, searches through each human heart and scrutinizes even its seat of emotion and affection to render accurate justice that is due to every person according to his ways and according to the fruit of his deeds. So two things. God judges a person according to the path that he chooses and also according to the works that he produces in the path. That type of evaluation is very, very thorough and very scary. I know on my call to the ministry, I wanted to do something else. I had other motives and so forth. And in that call, the Lord revealed to me how thoroughly he understood my thinking and how he was opposed to it. And it was really scary. I'll tell you, I don't want to do that again. But it was amazing. I sensed I was in the presence of a being who had absolute control over my life and how long it lived and so forth. And he knew everything about me. It was like standing in front of a judge and he had life and death power over you. Okay. So it's kind of scary, but that's what it was like. And that's the way the Lord is. Well, to illustrate how effective is his testing and his rulings, God gave the example of a man who acquires riches unjustly. He's like a partridge that hatched the eggs of another bird. The offspring would soon desert the mother and fly away. In other words, if a partridge hatched the eggs, if she came across some eggs and she hatched the eggs of a duck or the eggs of chicken or some other bird, maybe a robin or something like that, those little birds eventually, they would shy away from that partridge and fly away because they like to go with their own kind. So wealth had been acquired unjustly would be taken away, and the one who had been hoarding it would be exposed to be a fool. In other words, God said, just as sure as a partridge lays the wrong kind of egg and it hatches and that little chick doesn't follow that partridge, so a person who gains riches unjustly is going to lose those riches. I'll see to it. That's what God is saying. Accordingly, Jeremiah responded to the problem of the desperately wicked human heart by resting on the infinite sovereignty and the righteousness of the Lord. In verse 12, God's glorious throne of perfect righteousness, omniscience, and infinite sovereignty over every human heart and its emotional structure has been set on high from the beginning of creation so that absolutely no human being can escape a full accounting of justice to Almighty God. Now you think about that. Think of all the billions of people who have ever lived and who are alive today. Every single human being in history, his thoughts, his motives, his intents, his emotional structure, everything about him is completely known by the Lord. This is why when people stand before the Lord at the great white throne judgment, he's going to know them like the back of his hand, and he's going to deal with them, every person. And us as believers, we stand before him. He's going to know everything about us, and he's going to deal with us accordingly. So with that truth in mind, Jeremiah prays the Lord, saying, O Yahweh, the hope of all Israel, all who forsake you shall be put to shame. Those who turn away from you shall be written in the earth. That would be the dust of the earth, like the NIV says. For they have forsaken Yahweh, the fountain of living water. It's a wonderful reference to the Lord, calling him the fountain of living water. The source of ongoing abundant life is found only in God, not in these false gods that the people worship. However, armed with this hope, Jeremiah then applied it to the people who persecuted him. See, Jeremiah always had in the back of his mind this nagging problem. There were people who were constantly persecuting him, constantly going after him, bad-mouthing him. So Jeremiah called on the Lord to heal him, that he might be truly healed, to save him, that he might be truly saved. For the Lord was his praise, namely God was his cause for giving praise. This call for God's help arose out of Jeremiah's affliction from persecutors who said to him, "Where is the word of the Lord? Let it come." And they were mocking Jeremiah's claims of God's coming judgment. In other words, the Lord had sent Jeremiah a message. The Babylonians are coming, and they're going to clean your clock and everything. So Jeremiah would go out and give that message. And the people would say, go on with you. You know, when's God going to do such a thing? And this was frustrating to Jeremiah because the words that he was saying were the words that God gave him. And yet the people were mocking God's words that Jeremiah said, but they were mocking him. So Jeremiah explained that he had not turned away from God or from being God's shepherd to his people, nor had he desired the day of despair that he was tempted to feel because of his persecutors. For the Lord had known what Jeremiah had prophesied, that it was God's words and that the Lord was due to uphold. The prophet Jeremiah asked that the Lord not be a terror to him by not helping him regarding his persecutors. For the Lord was his refuge in the day of disaster at the hands of such evil foes. So he asked that his persecutors be shamed as people who were guilty of sin and deserving God's judgment instead of himself being shamed by his persecutors. That his foes be dismayed without Jeremiah being dismayed by their mistreatment. That God might bring on them disaster and destruction. It's interesting, tonight we're in Jeremiah 17, 9 to 18 on relying on God to handle very evil people, especially persecutors. On Sunday morning, the next message I'm set to give as the lesson is on Psalm 109, where David prays to God and asks for him to judge his persecutors. So, you know, we got two lessons back to back that I had not planned, that I had not timed. So apparently this may have real application. So God assured Jeremiah that he was totally sovereign over all men and that he would thus deal out justice so that no one would escape his full accountability to the Lord. Jeremiah then applied this promise to his suffering persecution as a messenger of God, in hope that the Lord would fully and justly recompense his persecutors. So, if we have been wronged, we can trust that God knows all about it and that he will fully deal with it. And that's a wonderful assurance that we have. It's interesting, there's a promise that the scriptures tell us in Romans chapter 12, I think it's verse 17, somewhere there. Vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord. The only one to take recompense or vengeance on anyone is the Lord. God is the only one who can do it justly and fairly without bias. And if we have to deal out punishment to someone who's wronged us, we can't do that. We don't. We lack the objectivity, but God doesn't. God is very objective, and we can trust that God knows everything about it, that he's completely sovereign over, and he will deal fully with it. It may take some time, but the Lord will deal with it. And I've seen this happen a number of times in ministry, where the Lord always does it. And of course, when the Lord gets involved, it's breathtaking. But what we need to do is to trust that God is very capable of handling very evil people. What we need to do is focus on ourselves. How are we? Are we right with the Lord? And take care of the heart that we can take care of is our own. We can't take care of someone else's heart. We need to focus on our hearts.